We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. Big thanks to everyone who checked out last week's episode talking the incredible documentary Senna by Asif Kapadia with guest J.J. Cooper. And a huge thanks to everyone who joined the chat in the Locker Room app on Thursday talking about their favorite sports documentaries. At the time I'm actually recording this, that Locker Room meetup hasn't happened yet, so fingers crossed that that goes smoothly and I don't look like an idiot saying this. But hoping to get more listeners chiming in on sports movie discussions on the Locker Room app in the future. Download the Locker Room app, me, I'll follow back or whatever it is, and we'll talk. And I have a weekly thing for Big Screen Sports. Also, if you like this show, you know, fucking prove it. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast, leave a review. You guys know the drill. Make those 5-star reviews rain. So today's episode, we've got some returning guests. These guys joined me last year to talk The Sixth Man, which is a terrible movie, but turned into one of my favorite episodes. Had to have him back on. The guest is the host of the Airbuds podcast, Jamel Johnson, Mike Benner, and Peter Moses. Guys, thank you so much for returning to Big Screen Sports.
Yo, I love that animosity you have towards your listeners. That's our vibe. Let's go. Fucking prove it, listeners.
I might just steal that for our listeners, incredible. If that's okay. Yeah,
that's actually a first. I decided it's the first time, so we'll see. You know, maybe if I get some, you know, like 10 5-star reviews off this, it'll be the right move. My last review actually came off the Moneyball episode from 2 weeks ago. It was actually a 2-star review because someone was mad that I got upset that Chris Pratt was a Republican. So we've got to reverse that. We've got to reverse those vibes. Mike, tell the folks where to find Airbuds, what you guys have been up to.
Oh, just go to @Airbuds on all social media. We are basically at this point in the pandemic, just alerting our followers to whenever Elizabeth Cambage posts to Instagram.
What have we been up to?
Staying inside?
Yeah, jerking off to pics of WNBA centers in their draws. That's what we do.
Well, guys, we're here to talk about an iconic film.
You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, by the way. We have a podcast.
Everywhere.
Yeah. We put out episodes every week.
Oh, yeah.
We're funny. Yeah,
You guys have a Patreon as well. Everyone go check that out. But you've joined me to talk about a legendary film, one that has endured over 20-plus years. We're talking about Space Jam, the 1996 basketball comedy. In a desperate attempt to win a basketball match and earn their freedom, the Looney Tunes seek the aid of retired basketball champion Michael Jordan. Starred Michael Jordan, Wayne Knight, Charles Barkley, Danny DeVito, and Bugs Bunny. Got a 43% on Rotten Tomatoes, grossed $230 million. And guys, this movie asked a question that no other movie before it dared to ask. Would you fuck a cartoon bunny?
Well, if you could tell how we feel about Liz Cambage, the answer is probably going to be yes.
Come on, man. It's cool that they removed the midriff. That's fine. That just makes the bunny more alluring.
It's been the hottest topic in pop culture on Fox News lately, is the de-hotness of Lola Bunny. But this movie is far more than Lola Bunny. It is, it really has. It's endured 20 years. We reference it all the time. We're getting a sequel this summer. Mike, I will kick it to you. Is this a Hall of Fame, all-star starter, or bench warmer sports movie?
Ooh, I do hope we circle back to the Fox News discourse on Lola Bunny, because I'm not caught up on that, and I want to know everything.
That'll be here in about 2 minutes, yeah.
Got it. I think it's an all-star, because it is a very fun movie. It's not a good movie. I feel like if you're going to be in the Hall of Fame, like you need to like be both enjoyable and well-crafted, and this is not the latter.
Peter?
Hall of Fame movie forever. There are just some Hall of Fame performances in this movie. First of all, Bill Murray didn't even know what movie he was in and just elevates the source material beyond anything. Like, he's just doing whatever he wants at all times, and that's delightful. And also, we'll get into it, but shout out to the five NBA players and their little montage for losing all their powers. Some sneaky, fantastic performances in this movie.
I think the worst performance in those five, but we'll talk about that.
Who?
Patrick Ewing can't act for shit.
He hates Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan made him be in that movie. It's incredible.
Jamel, what about you?
Well, as much as I hate agreeing with either of these fools, I must. Hall of Fame.
Yes,
and
thank
it's for
you.
The reasons Peter said. It's not. It isn't a good movie, but it's who cares? This is a sports movie where we get to see actual Hall of Famers just attempt to be light and fun. And in an era where players are literally like, we don't talk to each other. I hate whoever I'm playing. I want them dead. Here comes this movie where, you know, six or seven of the greatest basketball players ever are just being silly.
Larry Bird is hilarious in this movie.
Larry Bird crushes.
Larry Bird is not only... So this same year, he's in Celtic Pride, which is probably one of the worst movies ever made. Not sports movies, like worst movies. It is just a horrible piece of film. I think 2 years before this, he is in Blue Chips. Like, Larry Bird has a nice little run of cameos in basketball movies. For me, this one is not a... I'm trying to think of a comparison, because for me, it's a Hall of Famer. Because, I mean, we still talk about it 20 years later. It is iconic for what it is. Like, it was a topic in The Last Dance, which is important. It's a very important movie. It is like Mike said, this movie is objectively not great. But I think for what it stands for and what it, I mean, athletes have starred, like big time athletes have crashed and burned far worse in movies than Michael Jordan. Like Michael Jordan, just like some not as great Bulls teams in the 80s, like he lifted this movie to $230 million in the box office. That's fucking bonkers.
I know this movie's not good, but I'd also like to submit some alternate theories. First of all, the movie starts in the most insane way possible and makes me kind of think that this is either a man failing to grieve or a man covering up something that he doesn't want to talk about, or a combination of both. Feels a little WandaVision-y to me at some point, but then it obviously goes so far off the rails, but just... It's just a wild fucking pivot from a movie that like starts for like 3 minutes and then becomes something totally separate.
The opening scene reminded me of a joke from the episode of The Simpsons when George H.W. Bush moves in and becomes Homer's neighbor. And there's one joke where he is writing his memoir and he writes, "And because I had accomplished everything I had set out to do in my first term, there was no need for a second." The end. And that's kind of like what the beginning of this, like, it's like tiny Michael Jordan be like, I'm going to go to college and play for North Carolina. And then I'm going to go to the NBA. And then I'm going to honor you, Papa, by playing baseball. Because this is what I intended it to do my entire life. And thus I have achieved it. Like, that's what Michael Jordan is saying here.
That's one of my favorite parts of this movie is when child Michael Jordan and Michael Jordan, or the adult Michael Jordan with his thumb on the making of this movie, really wants that part in there of like, nope, I was actually planning on playing baseball my entire life and I absolutely was not shadow banned for gambling. Yeah. That's absolutely not what happened here. I very much enjoy that intro.
Despite the movie also kind of being about Mike's gambling problem.
Oh, we're gonna get into that. Yeah. There's probably my favorite part of the movie. But
this movie's about a lot of different problematic things, by the way. But we'll get into all that. Yeah.
Okay, so let's touch on the Lola Bunny discourse, because apparently this podcast is too anti-Republican in the first place. But catching up on Twitter lately, apparently in the Space Jam sequel, they have made Lola Bunny less hot. She is...
They de-sexed her.
She's just not a sex pistol like she was in this movie, which probably the hottest cartoon bunny of all time. I don't really...
I mean, I would actually argue Who Framed Roger Rabbit, like, phrased the question of fucking a cartoon rabbit like a full decade before this movie. Right? Isn't that whole thing like about a weird romance between a human and a rabbit?
Yeah, but
it's a hot person cartoon.
But the human is a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the human's a cartoon, and she's like an actual person. So it's the cartoon person hooking up with the rabbit instead of like a bunch of, you know, prepubescent boys watching this movie being like, is the rabbit hot?
And the answer is yes.
Sure, the rabbit is hot. When I was 10, I wasn't thinking about fucking the rabbit, dude. I was like, oh my God, it's Michael Jordan and the Looney Tunes. They added a new bunny. Sick. I don't get, like, okay, Tucker Carlson wants to jerk off to a rabbit and I'm supposed to care?
Right, so what is Fox News's stance on it, though, right now? Are they mad that, like, we've canceled hot Lola Bunny?
Yeah, they want hot Lola back. But I think Mr. Potato Head without a penis now has taken the has stolen the Lola Bunny discourse steam. But
that's wild because like they a decade ago they would rail against like sexualized image of children. Like it's just they stand
let
for
us
nothing.
Fuck this bunny.
Yeah.
Let us fuck him. Let us fuck the bunny. Either bunny. Yeah, I'm with you, Jamel. When I remember seeing this movie as a kid, it was like, wow, that bunny can fucking play basketball really well.
Yeah, that bunny's sick. That bunny can do the sham god.
The second best player on the team was Lola Bunny. She was one of the few with actual legitimate basketball skills. It was like her and MJ.
Yeah, she had a mid-range step back.
I find it hard to believe that the Looney Tunes community is like... There's probably, like, we see in that auditorium, there's, like, 50 characters living in that entire world. And I'm just like, how has Bugs never met Lola before? The only other bunny in their Looney Tunes world.
She just moved to town.
One of my favorite things about this movie is that it kind of, it's kind of a theory that Looneyville is actually hell. It is below the ground, and you have to be sucked through a golf hole to get there.
Until you can just get like a Teamster to drive you. That's the best part. I just want to say too, when Bill Murray is just like, "Yeah, I knew someone on production. I had a Teamster just drive me down here." That is, that's the fun, Mike. You want the reality, but like, who needs it? It's just a good laugh.
Yeah, we just need Bill Murray to not. Yeah, we just need Bill Murray to not be hammered drunk for 2 or 3 hours a day.
I've got a whopper of a Bill Murray trivia piece for the IMDb trivia section, by the way, something that blew my mind personally. But I also wanted to throw it out there of like what your all-time Monstars lineup, because I guess we're getting a new one. I haven't actually done as much research into the sequel, but I'm sure there's going to be something like that. But like I came up with kind of a chaotic Monstars, like something that I think would be really fun on screen. That's Rodman, Sean Kemp, Ron Artest, Charles Oakley, and Allen Iverson. I would love to see that played out in cartoon stolen talent form. Jamel, what about you?
Wow, as cartoon alien monsters? Okay, I'm going to start with Reggie Miller here.
Because he looks like an alien?
Yeah, and they should have, like... The Monstars don't lose if they replace Sean Bradley with Reggie Miller. You've got three bigs already. Come on. You just need one guy who can shoot. But I guess that's why the movie works. None of them can.
Does Reggie Miller's like sun tattoo around his belly button play into like the Monsters design at all? Does he have like flame powers?
It does now. What?
Oh, you've never seen Reggie Miller's tattoo?
Fuck no.
You've got a long night ahead of you, my friend.
Just shoot that over. Just shoot it over. Okay, so it's Reg. It's Kendrick Perkins. Steph. Durant. Who's my fifth? This last one's tough.
Because the last one has to be kind of a wild card or a chaos agent. Although Perk, I guess, might be the chaos agent.
Perk is the chaos agent.
R.I.P., but Robert Tractor Trailer.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad, because then he could like turn into a truck for certain plays. I see where you're going. You could kind of add a little bit of a Transformers vibe. You already said Ron Artest, Wildest Elbows in the Game. Damn, this is really hard. I can't pick a fifth. You guys got anything?
Ricky Davis.
Ricky Davis. He's just
picking gold calves.
Getting his own
rebound. Can you get a triple double? Yeah, can you get a triple double in a Space Jam game?
That's how they lose. That's how they lose. Ricky Davis alien turnover.
Peter, do you have a dream Monstars lineup?
Do I have a dream Monstars lineup? Well, if the goal is that I hate them, then I would just say five Dan Gilberts.
I don't know. Oh, we could LeBron have a front office fifth. In here. Yeah,
that's the aliens without getting the powers, though. That's just five of those little things.
Peter, thank you. My fifth is LeBron James because I hate his fucking guts. That's right. I forgot. And Bradley Beal is the star of my movie. And it's like Tiny Toons and like Animaniacs. It's like a different vibe.
Mike, what does your dream Monstars lineup look like?
I think I would do Kermit Washington, Carmelo Anthony, ooh, Brad Miller, Steven Jackson, and let's just say, and I already used them, but Ron Artest. And these are all players that have landed solid punches in actual NBA games.
Kermit Washington, the most solid punch of all time.
That's why he was my number one draft pick. Yeah. He sent Rudy Tomjanovic to the fucking hospital for six months.
Yeah, he almost
made
him look pretty.
Two participants in the Malice and the Palace on the same Monstars team. You give them 20-foot tall cartoon super bodies.
Yep. And I'm sorry to bring up Steven Jackson, especially in today's, in the wake of yesterday's news about Myers Leonard and everything.
What are you talking about, man? He's off the hook.
Yeah, he got himself free.
He's back. Welcome to Temple anytime, dude.
He managed to at least be anti-Semitic without like using any like slurs. He just quoted a book.
He was at least aggressively trying not to be anti-Semitic, even though he was.
No, you Myers know? Leonard would he cemented a spot in Disney's Space Jam movie.
Yeah.
Yep. Him and Carla Gugino, right? Is that her name?
No.
Carla Gugino.
Carla Gugino
is a saint. You're thinking of
I know you're talking about
what's her face? The terrible actor from The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I refuse.
Gina Carano.
Gina Carano, sure.
Yeah. Okay, let's roll into the IMDb trivia. I picked a few things. I mean, the best trivia in this movie you see in The Last Dance when they're talking about the court they built and the players coming to to play Michael on set and shit like that. The Monstars' names, because I don't think in the movie you actually hear their names. The orange one is Pound. The the magenta one is Not. The purple one is Bupkis. The blue one is Blanco. And then the green one is Bang, which makes me... We missed out on Kevin Harlan not being the announcer in this movie. So I mistakenly said Kevin Harlan instead of Mike Breen, who is famous for his Bang calls. I regret the error. Anytime that guy does something good.
I do think having two major characters' names being Pound and Bang is very suitable for this incredibly horny movie.
Okay, so here's the Bill Murray fact that blew my mind. Did y'all know Bill Murray is 6'2"?
Yeah, but I mean, he acts like he's 6'2".
Yeah, that checks out.
I can believe like it with his behavior. Bill Murray has like 5'10 energy. Like, not in a bad way, but like confident 5'10". I don't know. I've just never thought of him as a tall guy.
Him and Vince Vaughn act the same.
Oh, that's a good point.
Bill Murray's so fucking good in this movie. He basically conducts a full scene on the tee box with improv with Michael and Larry.
Like, he's astounding.
He is basically just creating funny moments for them in real fucking time. It is delightful.
What did he say about Larry Bird? He said Larry's not white. He's clear.
Larry's not white. He's clear.
You can argue that it's like in his top four movie performances of the 90s.
Well, I know where I'm jumping way ahead, but there's a moment at the end of the movie when he decides he's going to retire, where he looks directly into the camera and says that he's going to retire. It is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, I think that was literally him being like, I'm done for the day. I shot my 2 hours at this weird fucking green screen set. I talked to a bunch of tennis balls, and you know what? I'm done. I'm leaving.
He gave it his all. Yeah. He really did. The last bit of trivia I've got, I love casting trivia. I love could this movie have been different? And this is something that would have made the movie extremely different.
Mario Van Peebles was originally cast as Michael Jordan.
The director wanted Michael J. Fox to play Stan. This is a different movie if Michael J. Fox is Stan.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, if it's Michael J. Fox, bro, that's two movies. We're talking about a trilogy, baby. Whoa, it's like completely different rosters. One of the Monstars is Isaiah Thomas in the third one.
That is a wildly different movie because Michael J. Fox is just a gigantic star at this point and likable, like too likable. Like Wayne Knight is just kind of on the rise as Newman. He's third billed in this movie, Peter pointed out to me, which is insane.
Michael Jordan, Bugs Bunny, Wayne Knight.
Hell yeah.
But
Jamal mentioning Isaiah Thomas, though, I just think we need to throw out that he would have made an incredible Monstar because it would have just turned into a one-on-one between MJ and the Isaiah Thomas Monstar. Like everyone else would have, no one gets the ball. It's just straight up one-on-one between those guys.
It's wild that Sean Bradley is such a freak that he just walks like someone zapped his powers even when he's a normal basketball player. Mm-hmm. Like everyone else is doing like a Sean Bradley impression when they get their powers sucked out of them. But he's just like fucking Slender Man out there.
It is really funny at the end when like they're all like, we got our powers back. And like everybody's like showing off and like dribbling and like dunking. And then like Sean Bradley literally just like reaches up and puts the ball in the hoop and like it shows no athleticism at all. It's like you couldn't do that when you didn't have your powers. Like that seems pretty
easy. A really strange, strange choice for Sean Bradley. Because it's two Hall of Famers, Larry Johnson, who's just a freak of nature, and it's like pre back problems Larry Johnson when he's still like killing it. Muggsy, who is like an oddity is not a nice way to say Muggsy, but like very a unique player in the NBA, like, and they went the other direction with Sean Bradley, but a guy who was in the NBA literally just because he was a white Groot.
Right. I think they just went for the comedy. I mean, there's many examples of tall people and short people in comedy. We got Laurel and Hardy. We got Eric Wertheimer and Aziz Ansari and Master of None. Like, the only reason why they cast Eric Wertheimer is because he's a giant Hulk that makes Aziz look like a tiny baby. And I think that's the only reason why they did it. They had Muggsy and then they had Sean, and it just looks funny next to each other.
They should have had Manute Bol. That would have been the better choice.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into the best scenes in this one. Oh, Jamel, you had something?
No, I agree with that. Give Manute his flowers.
So the best scenes, I'm going to go at these chronologically. We're going to talk them out. The first one, I'm Peter, I chatted you over this last night. Potentially the best opening credits of all time. It's just MJ highlights over the Space Jam theme. Like, that's fucking awesome. Yeah! Slam and welcome to the jam. Come on and slam if you want to jam. It's how every episode of The Last Dance should have started.
I was about to say, The Last Dance wish it had this kind of vibe to it. It is just Michael being fantastic all the time, and it's like early Michael. So he's just really spicy as an athlete. It's pretty nice.
Well, that's why they should have given Mike more control. Because if Mike was really calling all the shots, it would have been better backing music on them highlights.
I think that is good music to Michael Jordan. I think that's what he thinks like great rap is.
And the meme from The Last Dance when he's on the bus listening to his Walkman, that's what he's listening to. He's just listening to Space Jam over and over.
Oh, my God. Thank you for reminding me of that damn song. Kenny Lattimore.
Oh, right. What yeah, see, he got pumped.
Baltimore's finest.
Yeah, he was like, I got the new Kenny Lattimore. No one's got this. And he's like, oh, you can have it, Mike. I don't think
he's like, yeah, man, it's all you, buddy.
I will say I have rewatched this movie probably like 3 or 4 times in the past like 5 years just for various reasons or fun. And I've definitely fast-forwarded through the opening credits this time. It's a 6-minute opening credit montage of Michael Jordan slam dunking in his own movie about how great he is.
That had to have been in the contract.
Yeah.
Like, you're putting a certain amount of me just dunking on people in this movie. Like,
I feel like they got done with a cut and they were just like, shit, this movie's 74 minutes long. We need to fix that.
I'll tell you what, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but there's multiple scenes here. I'm like, oh, I know for a fact they stretched this out because this was going to be a really short runtime if they didn't.
That's what I'm saying, man. Bill Murray and the golf course saving this movie.
Here's one, though, the baseball game with the catcher who is the worst goddamn teammate of all time, just selling out his pitcher, trying to let Michael Jordan hit a home run off him, which, like, no pitcher, you don't want the guy who hasn't played baseball in 20 years to take you deep, and this shitty-ass catcher just giving away the pitch is probably my least favorite character in the movie. Like, he's worse than Danny DeVito's character.
Thanks for autographing that basketball for my kid. I'm a hero now.
No problem. Happy to do it.
Let's go!
Curveball, don't swing. Don't swing.
But he did tee up Mike for one of his funnier lines, him swinging at the third and being like, I couldn't help it, man.
I want to say that is a bad teammate, but also one of the more inspired bits. It felt like it could have been an SNL sketch or something. It was pretty well done, I thought. It was one of the funnier bits.
The strikeout, the looking good when you strike out. That's something that has endured in this movie, funny enough. Not as much as like the concept of Mike's secret stuff and things like that, but the you look good when you strike out line, like that's been said in baseball dugouts in the last 20 years.
For sure.
The next one I've got is when the Monstars go hunting for talent at Madison Square Garden, which is, you can say that no one's gone hunting for talent in Madison Square Garden since this movie, really.
Hey, they got Julius Randle now. Come on. I'm a pro Julius Randle guy. He's good. I don't know if he's Monstar good, but he's got the look of a Monstar.
How many Knicks in the last 25 years make the cut for the Monstars after Ewing? Is it like maybe Carmelo for 1 year?
Oh, Shumpert is a Monstar.
Shumpert is a B-level Shumpert Monstar.
And Nate Robinson is a Monstar. Dunk champion, Nate?
That's true.
I just want to also shout out Patricia Heaton and Dan Castellaneta for that cameo too, when they're sitting next to the aliens dressed up, and she's like, you said you were going to get better seats this year. I'm sitting next to this fucking creep. And he's like, shut up. Let me watch the game.
Shut up. It was, it is like funny that like, she's like, you said we were going to get better seats. Like, you purposely picked the seats that are next to creeps. Like, what is she mad at him for?
that's on the ticket, yeah. Actually, that weird that the, like guy in the public masturbator trench coat is going to be sitting next to
you. Those are in 1997 $600 seats for sure.
Yeah.
Nah, them shits was a band.
I think, do you guys think
everything after the fucking gambling scandal in 1950 is $1,000 to sit in the garden?
That's probably true, actually.
Do you think Jeremy Lin Sanity gets a like, if Space Jam comes out in 2013, does Jeremy Lin get a call immediately after Lin Sanity happens?
I mean, yeah, but they could never get his character out of focus groups because they couldn't figure out how to draw him not racist.
Oh, that would have been super problematic.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to
just 10 different versions.
I want to point out that like the Monstars well, I guess maybe I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but like it's like they steal very specific players' powers, and then other than like the Muggsy Bogue monster being short, they're all incredibly similar to each other. Like even the
How does this team work on court? Like if an NBA team rolled out that starting five, how does that go in the 90s, and how does that go? I feel like now
Barkley
it's even worse.
Is the two, right?
Barkley, yeah. Or Larry?
I feel like I don't.
Barkley.
I feel like
Barkley's
Barkley,
a better shooter,
though. Yeah, Barkley is like Barkley has like a handle.
Barkley is the two.
Barkley is Draymond Green if Draymond Green got to steal somebody's powers.
Bringing the Draymond Green hate across podcasts.
I can't even talk about how different and off that is. I don't have time.
Draymond would be a really good Monstar, actually.
Yeah, Draymond should have been one of the Monstars.
I think he's going to be, right? Isn't he in the new one?
It should just be the Warriors. It should be the Warriors as Monsters. Yeah.
I feel like the over-under on current NBA players in this new one like should be set at 30.5, and I feel like the over is the safe play. I feel like it's just going to be cameo. Everyone is going to want in on this.
Because everyone loves LeBron, because people are all friends now. Everybody wanted Mike dead in 1995. They're making this movie. I'm not hanging out with Michael
fucking Jordan. Him and Larry Bird were fucking drinking and playing.
Larry Bird was retired for 5 years.
Larry
Bird had been retired for 5 years.
Shout out the best moment from The Last Dance, the fuck you bitch after the game.
Yeah.
Yo, that's Larry. Larry could never. Larry could never. I mean, I said it backwards. Mike couldn't. Mike couldn't coach a team. Larry beat Mike as a coach.
Okay, well let's speaking of Larry, the next scene is the golf scene. Probably Peter, I know you want to go in on the golf scene because it is Murray at his absolute fucking finest in this movie.
There's just like little things where after he hits the shot, he like holds the pose for way too long, like obnoxiously long, and you're like, this isn't that funny, and then he keeps holding it and it becomes funny. He's also just wearing an umbrella hat, which is inherently hilarious. And there's no rhyme or reason why Wayne Knight is there. They're like clearly not on the first hole, so he's just like not caddying, but just like following Michael around in a really weird way. There's just so many funny elements to this. And
like 5 minutes ago, you like called me out on being logic cop, and now suddenly, oh, well, they're not on the first hole. Why is Wayne Knight there on, like, the 18th? Like,
I'm not the logic cop, Michael. I'm also just... I can call out logic and still enjoy it. I'm not like, the logic is the reason why this movie is bad. I'm Michael. Give me a fucking break. It's just like... That's what makes it fun. It's funny.
Well, logic cop moment. Bill Murray agrees to closest to the pin.
Thank you.
After Larry Bird has already hit a shot closer than him. Like, he agrees to a loss. It's rich guys.
Still kind of funny.
Only rich people can do that. Only rich people can be like, I fucking lost. Yeah, sure, bet.
Must be nice. Do you think Bill Murray, like, the night before he was set to shoot, like, just got blackout drunk at, like, the smokehouse in Burbank and then, like, woke up with that umbrella hat on and he's like, I'll bring this to set?
100%.
Yeah, that's a good question. Is it his?
He brought it to set, for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, the next scene I've got for best scene, basically this goes into the game. The first half of the game, which we essentially just learned that Looney Tunes basketball is slam ball with less rules.
Oh, I do want to shout out the brevity of this movie, because there is very little like fun and games, training montage, anything. They get Michael's shoes and then suddenly he dunks five times and they're ready to play the game.
I also want to shout out another thing, too, where he, someone definitely references, Bill Murray, like, references David Stern. He's like, oh, maybe you could put a call in to David Stern to let me, like, come back and let me play. And then all of a sudden, the commissioner of the league, who's just, like, generic L.A. actor, who's been on, like, L.A. Law 17 times, is the commissioner in L.A. when they're shutting everything down. It's a fantastic inconsistency, in my opinion.
Bill Murray in this movie was doing what Master P was trying to do for the entirety of the 90s. He's just trying to get...
He is the Master P of this movie. You're right.
How much would you guys pay to watch Bill Murray versus Master P one-on-one?
$150.
Oh, right, yeah. I'd fork up $300 for that.
$300?
Yeah,
300?
Sure.
Damn it.
I mean, we're in a year of COVID. Like,
do I have to pay it all at once, or can I just like pay it out over like?
No, you can pay it on Klarna. You can use Klarna. You can use Afterpay.
I'm going to some streaming website where I may or may not get my NBA games and watching it there for free.
Yeah, the hell, $300, bro. You could buy a computer and build them fools playing as little CGI.
You guys remember I'm not paying rent anymore, right?
Yeah, okay, so sure. Now he's just wasting all his money on pay-per-view events.
Hey, guess what? I'm the logic cop now. You're going to jail, Peter.
Their combined age has to be like 130.
Master P,
right?
And Bill Murray?
Master P
Bill
and Bill
Murray's
got
to be close to 70, ooh, right? And Master...
Oh, he's at least in his 70s.
I'm gonna say late 60s for William. And then I'm going to say mid-50s for P.
I was going to say like 48, 49.
P ain't here. P got to be about 55.
50. Master P is 50 on the dot. He turns 51 at the end of April.
Benner.
That was close.
Benner with the hit.
Bill Murray 70.
Yeah, so 120.
Okay. 130 on the dot.
Wow. 120, right?
No, that's 120.
120. Yeah, Matt, this 120 on the dot. 120 on the dot. So I was close. Yeah, that.
Yeah, he's still pretty close. Yeah, that's good. Ooh.
So Master P wins that.
Oh,
that
for
one
sure. I think Bill Murray is.
Gonna have to probably yes.
His liver is a jello shot right now. I don't think.
Yeah. I was about to say his liver is 600 years old.
He's too busy playing the Lake Tahoe, the Celebrity Pro Am tournament to play Master P on 101. Okay, next scene I've got is Mike's secret stuff, which has endured as long as anything in this movie. Still a mainstream reference that you hear all the time. Mike's secrets. It's just perfect. Perfect scene, really. Like, a perfect concept. The ultimate placebo effect.
Yeah, finished? Great speech and all, Doc. You had him riveted. But didn't you forget something?
What?
Your secret stuff. Wow. Whoa. Nice deltoid. Play along. Stop hogging it, Mike. We're your teammates.
Secret stuff.
Secret stuff?
You wouldn't hold out on us, would you?
No, I mean, I didn't think you guys really needed it. I mean, you're so tough. You're competitive.
Yeah, and I think it also is a great character moment for Bugs Bunny. Like, you kind of wonder why he's the leader of the Looney Tunes a lot, because he's not bringing a lot of leadership to the table here, but he knows how to motivate his guys in the moment when it counts. It's a funny bit when Mike is like trying to motivate the team, and then like Bugs Bunny's like, nice try, dipshit. Here you go. You got to trick these dumb shits to get them to do well.
Yeah. He leaned into his skills, which is deception. If there was a sequel, there's definitely a scene where he's himself in a wig and he gives a very empowering speech as a female version of Bugs Bunny, which does offend Lola Bunny greatly.
Okay, the just on that, the second half is where you get into the classic. It's the most classic Looney Tune part of the movie. You get Dynamite. You get MJ holding up a parent rapist Pepe Le Pew as a gas
bomb.
Can
I also just point out too that like. The stakes of this movie are slavery, and it's just
it's crazy,
very overlooked. How then Mike, like, I feel like it's in line with like Michael's views of just like a lot of things that we've heard about him, where he's just like, yeah, whatever, I'll give a fuck.
Yeah,
it's fine.
It was kind of wild to just hear myself. Them, the cute little voiced by a child alien at the beginning, to be like, we're gonna enslave you. Like, what? I forget about that line every time I've seen the movie.
You're going to be our slaves. Yeah, slaves. That's it. Slaves.
Oh,
slaves,
God.
Forever.
Like, they could have done it without the word slavery. Like, they didn't.
I don't know. It seems like they really needed it.
Yeah, 95, the slavery is too hot. It's too hot of a line.
LeBron's, they're sharecroppers and LeBron's version.
I'm not even gonna touch that. I don't.
Good idea.
I'm not gonna touch that one. The last scene I've got is the final play when Bill Murray shows up. Guys, Jamel, I'm gonna start with you. What's the best scene in this movie?
The best scene in this movie is the golf scene. Honorable mention to what I hope is Mike's real dog in the scene where him and Daffy go back for the shoes. I love Daffy and Bugs Bunny's conversation in the scene when they go back for the shoes.
It's great.
He's just like, yo, you know they got lunchboxes and shit of us?
It is very like two old-timey actors complaining about like the golden years of Hollywood.
Yeah, it is. That, I think to me that scene definitely captures like the old Bugs Bunny Daffy vibe the best. Like, I know we're seeing all kinds of Looney Tunes characters, but like that scene is the one that I was like, oh, this is the Looney Tunes vibe the most.
The Looney Tunes are very much supporting characters in this movie. Like, that's a weird thing to say, but they are just, this is the Michael Jordan show. It is more about MJ and more about the humans. And the Looney Tunes are just there for stuff like that, for their slapstick stuff. And then, yeah, the great conversation between Bugs and Daffy. I think Daffy mentions that they're either, it's not a union job or it is a union job or something like that. That one flies over the kids' heads, I believe.
Yeah, there's some good stuff like that. Also, secondary honorable mention to Patrick Ewing. I know, Ben, I know you said he can't act, but he was game to be involved in an impotency joke.
That's right. He's like, I thought.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So give him his bars. That's it.
But he also like couldn't stand to like be the butt of the joke. Like the therapist was like, do you have any trouble like performing anywhere else? And he like sits up and he's like, I fuck doctor. Like
I went to fucking Georgetown, bro. I fuck.
Yeah, that's funny.
Does anyone have an argument for the golf scene not being the best scene?
I would say it is.
I mean, Bill coming back is pretty good.
I will say one of my favorite moments is Bill coming back, and he kind of just comes in like a Tasmanian devil to add Bill Murray flavor all over the finale. And he did, and I think that he may have been called in for reshoots because they just were like, this final scene fucking sucks. And
we got nothing, Bill. We got nothing.
But you know, luckily it's easy to reshoot when it's all green screen, and you can tell it's green screen because when he enters, he is high-fiving characters that are not there. I don't know if you guys noticed, there's 2 to 3 high fives that he's just high-fiving the air, and you're just like, oh, Bill Murray just came in like a whirlwind, did whatever he wanted for these reshoots, and then left. And they were forced to cut around whatever they got from him. And it's kind of great because of it.
Yeah. The God himself.
Well, because you know someone, like some poor bastard, probably not the director because he knew better, but some poor bastard probably like tried to tell. But he's like, okay, Bill, so you're gonna run in through here and we just need you to do a couple of things. And he shut him down right here. He's like, listen, I'm just going to go and you just draw the stuff around me and we're good. And I think that that's clearly what happened. The golf scene is my favorite, though. I mean, because of Bill Murray. So,
can I give honorable mention to just two performances other than Bill Murray that aren't necessarily related to scenes? But I really do think Wayne Knight does some fantastic work in this movie. Like, it is, like, his role is ridiculous. And even he somehow, through his craziness, endears himself to probably the actual human Michael Jordan, I think. I feel like you kind of see Michael like starting to just enjoy him throughout the movie a little bit more, even though like, because I don't think Michael has like any semblance of what acting is or really caring at any point. I just think he did
It would have been kind of sick if Wayne Knight became a fixture at Bulls games during the second Jordan run, like had a big role in The Last Dance. So, Peter, it sounds like you're gonna be fighting for Wayne Knight in the supporting character award. Guys, let's take a quick ad break and then get back with best quote.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so best quote. Best quote in this one is, it's hard to find a quote that is not a Bill Murray quote. I had a couple nominees. I think they're all Bill Murray. I think I have 3 Bill Murray quotes and then 2 others. The one right when the golf shot is hit, or right after Mike is sucked down into the hole. When Bill Murray grabs the camera, he's like, "What kind of camera is that?" Just
what kind of camera is that?
It's just.
Would you not point that at me, please, and close the lens cap?
I didn't do anything. Where'd he go?
The general reaction, he's spitting fire through the whole golf scene because right after he goes, "Larry, I'm going to give us 2s back there. We weren't in any emotional shape to fight."
That was a very good line.
Which is awesome. He also gives us the "I don't play defense" at the end, which. You know, in 90s NBA, you know, doesn't fly. But now, you don't play defense. Like, maybe Bill Murray could have played in today's NBA. But the line of the movie might actually be Barkley when he's praying at that church. And he says, "I'll never go out with Madonna again."
What a time capsule that exact moment is of the 90s. Charles Barkley in a church saying, "I'll be a role model. I'll never go out with Madonna again," is like... Pretty fucking 90s.
It's excellent.
That's funny.
Shouts out to the girls who kick him off the court in the other game, too. He's just like, "You're not Charles Barkley. Leave. I've never played bad so bad in a pickup game where they make you leave before the game's over."
That is fun. So this grown man gets allegedly, hypothetically... They mistake a grown man for Charles Barkley. And these girls don't read the news and realize that he's going through some shit. And they just they beat his ass off the court. And then they're just like, "No, get out of here, grown man." Not because he did anything to him, just because he's fucking bad. It's the most shameful thing I've ever seen.
She swats one of his shots and is like, "You know what? Get out."
I go, isn't weird that Charles Barkley in his time of introspection is hanging around a girl's schoolyard? Watching them play basketball.
He's walking
around
New York.
He just said he's
never
going to go out with Madonna again.
Yeah. He was soul searching.
Kyle, you also said something about these girls don't read the news. I just want to point out that no one in this movie, apparently, in the entire universe of this movie, including space, earth, and hell, which is where Looney Tunesville is, nobody reads the news because a spaceship blasts over a fully sold out baseball game that Michael Jordan is playing in and then burrows into the ground. And this is the beginning of the movie and nobody talks about it. And then
that would have been the biggest story.
And then later Michael Jordan, not to get ahead of ourselves, arrives back on Earth after having been missing. His wife barely even noticed, by the way. And he arrives via spaceship and walks off and enters a baseball game in a cloud of steam, and then cut to, "Oh, Michael Jordan's making a basketball comeback." Nobody wants to talk about how Michael Jordan is an alien. What is happening?
So I was going to ask you guys a question. This is a good time for it. What NBA player could show up at a game in a spaceship and it would just be treated as an eccentric guy? It was if Kyrie showed up to the arena in a spaceship, it would just be Kyrie showed up in a spaceship, and it would be a funny clip on Twitter for a little bit. No one would think anything of it.
I would also say Klay Thompson, just because the media just wouldn't ask him any, they wouldn't, they're just not talking to Klay.
I think Spencer Dinwiddie is probably building a spaceship out of several gaming PCs right now. And I think someday he will arrive in that spaceship.
Could see it. I could see all of it.
Amen.
MJ is too serious to show up in a spaceship. That would have been questioned a lot more, I think. He has the influence, but I don't think he has he's not eccentric enough to have not been deeply questioned in it, to not have been a huge thing that he showed up in a spaceship.
I think people would probably be too afraid to question Michael Jordan if he showed up in a spaceship. He's the last time I asked him, you know, if he was going to be on time tomorrow, he hit me with a bat. Like, I can't ask him about the spaceship.
So I want to get into I want to get into the most authentic and least authentic sports-centric parts of this movie, the most realistic parts. I usually defer to my guests for this to throw out what they thought was the most realistic and least realistic first, but I want to get it out there that this movie has one of the most realistic parts in any sports movie ever, and that is Michael Jordan finding a way to place an extremely risky wager in the middle of a basketball game for his soul, for his freedom, just so he can, and he's doing this. The wager is either his freedom or his competitor's talent. He's literally risking his freedom just so he can beat the shit out of Charles Barkley and Patrick Ewing again. It is the most MJ thing of all time.
It's not about the money. It was never about the money for him. That's what it's about, baby.
It's crazy. Like, it is, watching it as an adult, and he just like stops the guy and he's like, wait a minute. I want to make this as high stakes as I can possibly make it. It's like, that's why you're allegedly shadow banned and playing minor league baseball. Like, minor league baseball, no, MJ did not learn his lesson. Like, he's making even riskier wagers.
Also, if you are kind of covering up your tracks with a kids movie that's really actually all about that shadow ban, is there a better way to thumb your nose at the world than kind of placing a wager in the middle of the penultimate part of the movie?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It is big time gambling addict energy, because like the reason why he makes that gamble is because he's on a roll. Like, he's on a hot streak. Like, it's like someone's like they're about to break even at the blackjack table and then just go all in because they think the luck is on their side.
He's on a heater, Mike.
I also think it's crazy that he makes this bet, because why are the Looney Tunes his friends? They've been nothing but annoying. Like, it's just like they didn't even try to train for a basketball game that they kidnapped Michael Jordan to win for them. Like, why does Michael Jordan care about these people?
They took him away from the only thing in golf, the only thing in the world that Michael Jordan likes, which is golf. That's a very good point. Like, I don't know why he has any skin. But I think the thing is, I don't think he has any loyalty to them. I just think when they were like, yeah, we made a very risky wager, he was like, oh, risky wager. Yeah. I'll play that. Yeah. I'll play that.
Michael, our lives are in danger. I'm going to need more. We made a bet. Okay.
Does anyone have anything more realistic?
Well, Mike calling the last play. Oh. Is also pretty. Yeah, somebody steal the ball, give it to me, and I'll figure this shit out.
That is a great quote from Bill Murray. He's like, "Oh, I don't play defense."
I will call out another Bill Murray line that I think is underrated. That happens. Michael Jordan is about 5 or 6 seconds into his flight in the final like slam dunk, and then it cuts to Bill Murray and he goes, Michael, I'm open. And that to me is really funny. Like, he's
and
that's such a good bit.
And if that's LeBron, he hits Bill Murray with a pass in the chest right away.
Which is a fucking mistake. Come on.
I do want to call out one other line that I found really funny. God. When it's right before Michael arrives to give all the NBA players their power back, Muggsy Bogues is I guess mourning the state of his life, saying, "You guys are all tall. Like, what? Like, look at me. Without my talent, I'm just another short guy." And then Charles Barkley just immediately says, "That's right."
I felt that on a very funny level, like
line delivery. I think that might have been an editing joke where like the editor in the edit bay just found that, oh, putting these two lines together will be very funny for me.
This movie actually, it has one of the most realistic sports movie aspects ever. It also has one of the most least realistic sports movie aspects ever. It's not that he's playing with, you know, in cartoons or Looney Tunes Land or the stretching out his arm for the last bucket. It is that he would be supportive walking into the locker room for halftime as they were getting their ass kicked. He would walk in that locker. He'd be motherfucking Bugs Bunny to death.
That's like, the funniest part about this movie is like it's actually the only way Michael Jordan could have ever starred in a movie is if you basically didn't let anyone act with him ever because he just would have been insufferable. Like it just had to be people in green suits and Bill Murray for like 2 days.
Imagine him just telling Daffy Duck that he was just a sorry piece of shit and a fucking loser when they're just getting dick sanded by the Monstars.
What if this movie is an insight into how Michael Jordan sees himself? And in his mind, when he is, you know, calling Steve Kerr a sorry piece of shit, he is being supportive. And like what we're seeing in Space Jam is how he views himself as a teammate, but like he doesn't realize that like standing over someone chomping on a cigar and like swinging a baseball bat is like not endearing. It is very threatening. Michael Jordan, please do not swing that bat so close to me.
When he breaks them out of the huddle before the game, they're like the whole team is hyped and he's just like, guys, let's just have fun. Like that's not the MJ right. I know. that's not Mike. That's not what we want.
They should have just had Scott Burrell on the bench as real-life Scott Burrell.
I think Michael actually brought Scott Burrell in to audition for Wayne
and
Knight's
personally
part.
Personally said you didn't get the gig.
Yeah, and just personally he's like, you're going to meet with producers, man. We're going to fly you out to L.A.
Motherfucking Scotty, shit. Scott, you said the line wrong.
Oh, my God. Oh, Jesus. Okay. Let's get into what worked about this one. What makes this one a great... Jesus Christ, I'm crying. That was fucking great. So something that we have not talked about, and it's kind of something that works about this one, but also 25 years later doesn't work about this one, is that the soundtrack slaps. And part of the reason that it slaps is thanks to the one and only Robert Kelly, who is about as canceled as you can get right now. Like, even Fox News has canceled R. Kelly, which is
I mean,
a big
what
step.
What is jail if
I,
not
I
the
I heard Ben Shapiro
sign
him
you know?
To his record label.
He's Yo. Starring in the movie. He's singing the song. He's actually bringing I Believe yeah. I Can Fly to the new Gina Carano movie.
Yeah, why can't we just get the Fox 5 to just read their Dr. Seuss, fuck Lola Bunny and listen to Remix to Ignition, just like all good Republicans
God
want
damn.
To.
I just want to see the Fox News canceled list, just like how they decide who's canceled.
I would love to see that. Someone, I
would want. Now that's my $300.
I'd pay for one random snapshot of a whiteboard in a Fox News office just to see what's on it.
If you combine that with the Bill Murray Master P one-on-one, because that game's over in like 10 minutes, right. So you need something to fill the hour, and it's
oh,
just
sure,
like,
yeah.
It's just
bundle
like
it.
Tucker Carlson and a few like the ghost of Lou Dobbs or Roger Ailes just picking out.
You're gonna get another two-star review
but the soundtrack
from this
episode. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Someone needs to make up for the one and two-star.
Shout out to the Republican who's still listening to you after the review. They're like, I'm going to give you this review, and then I will be tuning in again, sir.
I mean, I can't think of anything more Republican is notifying someone, I hate you, and I will be listening
I will boycott
every day.
By consuming everything you do. I do appreciate, though, I think it says something about the quality of this podcast that they went two stars and not one.
I truly appreciated that. Like, I sent it to a friend. It was like, it's actually, like, very nice that they didn't do a one star. Because, I mean, I've had some one stars, like... I think my favorite one-star review is the person who reviewed my niche sports movie podcast and said, one star, concept is too niche. Which, like, why are you here,
yeah,
sir?
Put it in there in the title and description.
Two stars is all respect. Sir, amazing content. I love the formats and the way you present them. I just do not agree with your ideals.
Chris Pratt is a
you
saint.
Acknowledge black people exist. No, I'm sorry.
It was probably the most respectful two-star review, frankly. But yeah, the soundtrack for this one slaps. R. Kelly, you know.
Monica.
He, can sing real good. Yeah, Monica.
Seal.
Pump Up the Jam is the game
Method
intros.
Redman.
I mean,
Busta Rhymes.
The Bugs Bunny rap written by Jay-Z is an all-timer.
Which is on the soundtrack.
It is on the soundtrack, yes.
And it's like, you can't find it almost anywhere.
No, it's pretty, I think, hard to find. Did Billy West do the rap too?
Yes, I think so.
That's crazy. Voice of Fry has worked with Jay-Z.
It's essentially Jock Jams. The soundtrack is essentially like a more star-studded Jock Jams.
Smoothed out Jock Jams, because there is no techno. Jock Jams would hit you with some nice techno dance beat. You hear the rhythm of the night, or, you know what I'm saying? Some shit, Cotton Eye Joe.
See, and I think the Space Jam sequel, which, like, I had put something at the end, you know, some spitballing about the sequel, but I feel like the sequel is going to suffer from too many people wanting in on to be, like, to get in on that. Like, it's gonna be a bunch of people trying way too hard. I'm not dialed into music enough, but, like, you know, Drake has probably already written 30 songs.
Oh, yeah.
Or had someone write 30 songs to get on that album.
It's also kind of impossible for this sequel to be good. It's just impossible for the sequel to be good, because, like, the point of this movie and why it's so fun and I love it so much is it's because it's a psychological nightmare when you start bringing in, like, logic or reality into it. Like, and, like, this movie's, like, someone's trying really hard to try to figure out how to make this movie. It's like Space Jam 2, like, engaging, like, there's no expense not taken care of. I think they're setting themselves up for massive.
Right. I think to bring it back to what works about this movie is that, like, it's just a chaotic mess. There are, like, several scenes where there's just 15 Looney Tunes characters, like, going insane and spitting everywhere. Like, it's just like there's no logic.
No, the spit shine is hilarious.
Sylvester has a couple base hits in this joint.
Sylvester takes a moment in the first half of The Big Game where they are fighting for their literal lives to eat a teammate.
Yeah, man. In the middle of trying to figure out what play to run.
On brand. On
Isn't he the
brand.
One? Doesn't he also take one of Marvin the Martian's slugs to the stomach as halftime?
And
is?
It leaves a giant hole that Tweety can fly through.
Something I want to shout out that I've forgotten about until just now is I'm going to miscredit someone. I think Yahoo Sports did it a couple years back where they did a fake 30, like a fake 5-minute 30 for 30 on the Space Jam game that was dead serious. And it was a fucking perfect piece of comedy. It was a bunch of people just talking about Space Jam, had it, like, happened in real life. And it was excellent. I need to find it.
I'm going to take a random stab and guess that a friend of the podcast and maybe someone you should book on your podcast, Kyle, CJ Toledano, probably wrote and directed that. That sounds like something exactly he would do when he was working for Bleacher Report.
Literally sounds verbatim like something he'd make.
I am looking for it now. Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of art. This was in... God damn, what was it, 2016? Peter, what else worked about this one as well while I look into this?
About, like, the athleteness of it all, like the sport of it all?
Just in general. Like, what makes this one a Hall of Fame? Why are we still talking about this 25 years later?
I think there's something, like, fantastic about this movie, which I'm going to reference another movie that I'm sure not... this might be a little bit of a detour, but roll with me. I watched Moonstruck the other night with
Nicholas
Cage. My wife and in-laws. Nick Cage, Cher, Olivia Dukakis. Like, probably one of the best movies now that no one's allowed to watch a Woody Allen movie ever again. Like, just representing, like, the city of New York as an entity. And
people stop watching Woody Allen movies?
Yeah, Woody Allen has, he's yep. I he's, don't know, he, I bet.
Oh, Shmel, we'll catch you up off air.
No, I'm hip. No, I remember
the
what happened.
Is like the Mr. Potato Head of the Jews, if you will, right now. He is
it was
canceled.
Cause of the doc. It was because of the doc that came out. It's like, Bama's was watching his shit last summer.
Yeah, dude, I watched Midnight in Paris in theaters. I'm a piece of shit, obviously.
Midnight in Paris is still really good.
It is nice to have like conversations about like problematic people while looking at a big poster for Manhattan or something.
That's true. Moonstruck is a perfect movie because like the stakes of the movie are always like kind of there, but like they're never really like you're not really concerned about them. Like she's like, oh, she's got to marry the brother, but like she ends up not marrying the brother, and it's like not a big deal. Like the stakes just don't really matter. And I think something about how like you never really care about his kids, you never really care about like his wife, you never really care about him disappearing. So much of the things you don't care about is, I think, actually what allows this movie to be fun in a way where like it's kind of all the stuff that yada, 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 which allows just like them doing bits for 75 minutes makes it enjoyable.
And to your point,
because they didn't cast Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, Michael J. Fox. Michael would have J. Fox was in this movie. Story structure.
All of that stuff. Everybody watching the movie would have been like, "Well, what about where's the daughter now?"
Yeah, I think to your point, the chaos of this movie is the big win for it, and the seriousness and logic. Like, I'm sure the LeBron reboot or sequel is going to just not have fun. It's gonna be like seeing Batman Returns, Tim Burton's like insane fucking weird Batman movie, and then immediately watching like The Dark Knight Rises, and like, oh, like Christopher Nolan managed to like suck all the fun out of this thing, and like technically it's like a better, well crafted movie, but man, I'd rather watch Batman Returns.
The one thing the remake, actually, I will get to my remake take at the end. I want to get into just a few things that didn't work. You know, we've already, I mean, this movie is not trying, you know, to, like, it's not trying to win an Oscar. It's not trying to be too serious. This isn't something that necessarily didn't work, but MJ's house in Birmingham, like the thought of MJ living on just a normal street, like it's a very like curious choice to be like, oh yeah, here's MJ in his nice but not too nice house. Whereas like if you've seen the MJ Rides the Bus 30 for 30, like he lived in a very exclusive gated neighborhood in Birmingham.
Like, they even had two friendly white people driving by being like, honk honk, hi Michael, and he like turns around and waves to them. It's pretty... Yeah, this movie.
It was pretty funny that he lived in a like 3-bedroom house, like a perfectly nice house. But I was like, no way that is his house. There's no way he lives that close to his neighbors. Also, are we clear on whose dog it is in the movie? Is it the neighbor's dog or is it his dog?
I think it's his dog, isn't it? Because it's in the house.
Right, but who's the woman that runs out and takes the dog away? Like, is there just an unacknowledged, like, mother-in-law or something? Like, because in the beginning, the dog tackles Michael Jordan.
Mother.
And then an old lady runs out, grabs the dog, and takes it away. And then Michael Jordan's wife drives up. So I'm just like...
I took that. That is the maid.
Oh, I took that as his widowed mother.
I don't think MJ. Oh, maybe. That is... Oh,
that he doesn't even acknowledge. Doesn't even say thank you for getting the dog off me.
Thank you, Mom.
Who's then inside cooking for him, a grown man.
Oh, was she inside the house? I think I missed that.
She was inside the house because he walks in and she is making chicken and collard greens.
Oh, yes, that is right. Okay. So it is his dog.
Because he's in Birmingham and he will be eating a Southern meal. And
not a safe dog to have around those small children, by the way. The dog literally tears a door off the hinges trying to eat Daffy Duck. And I'm like, Daffy Duck's the same size as that little girl.
Like, other than that, I didn't really have anything that didn't work. MJ's house sticks out to me. The everyman house of Michael Jordan. You know, we already talked, I Believe I Can Fly. Great song. R. Kelly's very canceled. MJ not putting two and two together that the guys that had their talents stole by aliens until Stan gets fried at halftime. Like he was like, wait a minute. You're telling me that the aliens were real small and now they're real big and good at basketball. At the same time, five guys I know have had their talents sapped apparently. And there's five aliens. What a strange coincidence.
I also want to just shout out to the Looney Tunes defense in the second half because they held them to 11 points in the second half. They had 66 points to start the third quarter and the final score was 78-77. So just like a Hall of Fame defense performance.
Absolutely.
It's 0-4 Piston shit.
Yeah.
Did anyone else have anything that didn't work?
Something that literally didn't work for the Looney Tunes brand was introducing the five moron aliens into the family. It was a clear, like remember, like, in the new Muppets movie when, like, they made Walter the main character, and we're like, who the fuck is this dumb Muppet that nobody likes? Like, give us Kermit. Like, that's how I felt about, like, the morons when they, like, were like, you're part of our family now. And you're like, no, they're not. These are not.
They were trying to sling some merch off.
Exactly.
That,
yeah.
I don't think anyone liked them.
You know, the Looney Tune execs dreamed of the moron spinoff.
Absolutely.
They was trying to get the moron series going, but it was too late. The Looney Tunes was already dead in the water, man. To that point, I think Danny DeVito. Is that Danny DeVito?
Yeah,
it's Danny DeVito.
Who's the voice?
DeVito.
His character is the lamest. I know they're making fun of Jerry Krause, but. It's like, I don't know. We don't really need him. I wish the morons was trying to make the NBA their slaves on their own.
That would be actually might be more interesting if five adorable, like, aliens are purely driven by their own, like, sociopathic actions, like, rather than Danny DeVito being.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What if in the sequel Danny DeVito's back, but he's much more like Frank from Always Sunny? Like they don't explain it, but he's exactly like that character.
He's just gone to shit. He's like wearing the like a dirty like athletic shirt and is just like gone crazy. And he's pulling guns on everybody all the time. He shoots LeBron in the shoulder by accident.
You know for a fact that sometime during a Bulls practice, when the entire team and staff were in there, that Michael Jordan just shouted to Jerry Krause across the gym to remind him that he made him the villain in a kid's movie as a fat little alien nerd.
Absolutely, just, he did that.
There
was like five reasons Michael Jordan made the movie, and that's one of them. The other ones being like laundering his gambling debt.
and so he had something to not put Scott Burrell in.
Yeah, exactly.
I also want to just shout out the end of this movie, that they make it all look fantastic, like when he's wearing the number 45 and he's come back. He's catching a fat L to the Orlando Magic in that last scene.
Yeah, you get a little Shaq cameo in there.
Yeah.
Just
glimpse of young Shaq. The Kevin Costner and Freddie Prinze Jr. Awards for Best and Worst On-Screen Athlete, I think our greatest living basketball player probably takes the cake. But I will say the guy pitching to MJ in the minor league baseball game was actually, that was a real pitcher, you could tell. Guy was throwing some heat. The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character. Peter, I'm going to give you the floor because for me, it's Bill Murray as himself. Shout out to Barkley. But you were on the Wayne Knight corner.
I'm on the Wayne Knight corner, but I'm actually going to go with someone else. I really think it's got to be Daffy Duck. I think Daffy Duck is so underappreciated in this. Like, he's just always, you know, kind of picking up after Bugs Bunny and always getting ragged on. But he's just doing it so fucking well. I just think Daffy Duck is kind of the perfect cartoon character because he's like, he's perfect in this movie too because he's Bugs' foe, but he's also like his right hand man. And they're also like bitching about not getting royalties on lunchboxes. He's there to get punched in the face every time. He's a huge underrated part of this movie for me.
I think Daffy Duck is an underrated cartoon character in general. I think early Daffy Duck in particular, when he was less petulant and more just a psychopath, is so fun. Like, very fun. Can I throw a supporting actor in? Every movie needs a good villain. And Vlade Divac as the leader against Magic Johnson's AIDS in this movie is a great villain. They clearly are playing like some kind of metaphor for not the players not wanting to play because of there's germs, and like this is happening right in the wake of Magic Johnson and his like it's insane that they put this in a children's movie.
It is a massive COVID allegory.
Yeah, it looks
through and
now,
through.
Yeah.
25 years later,
They've got like the pest tent on top of the forum.
They canceled the league. Yeah, they canceled the NBA and because they didn't want to play until the players were healthy and safe again. Like they literally
take a note, Adam Silver, you fucking asshole.
Well, see, because the situations was different because you can't. Nobody wants to see, you know, Larry Johnson who can't dunk. But if he can dunk and has COVID, that's different.
That's true. Fair.
You
that's
can fair. Still dunk with COVID is what I'm saying to you.
Until COVID dunks on you.
Into
that's
the grave.
That's why Peter is my guy. There
thank
you go.
Thank you. Thank
there you.
You
go.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, mine is Bill Murray. I think I've said enough. And Bill Murray, it's just he's on a heater. He's just Bill Murray's in a different movie. He's in the Bill Murray Show. It works perfectly. He crushes Donald Duck. Great, though. The Big Chill, which in your typical sports movie, you know, the moment that makes the hair on the back of your neck stand up. It's Roy Hobbs hitting out the lights in The Natural, that sort of thing. I have two in this movie. I have two nominees. There's the final shot, which is corny, but like I got the chills more. I think it was like a nostalgia thing. And then this is very much a nostalgia thing. When MJ gets intro'd in the game, like when they, you know, 6'6" from North Carolina, I was like, oh shit, I remember this. This is a great time.
The player coach of the Toon Squad at 6'6" from North Carolina is Royal Airness, Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I would just also like to shout out Mike and Jamel because they were both in my wedding party and in the middle of my wedding. I did the Bulls intros for everyone in my wedding party. And it was one of the favorite things that happened other than getting married.
It was pretty fun.
Did you shout us out to say that? That sounded more like a, I'm going to shout out my wedding.
Yeah,
I don't know why you included us.
He was shouting out his own good idea, but was trying to make it seem altruistic.
Just that we were involved.
No. I don't want to be altruistic here. I had a fucking great idea, and they happened to be a part of it. Let's be very clear.
Yeah, that's. I know. I'm just was confused as to why I was getting a shout out this deep into the program.
I have also attended a wedding where they did the Chicago Bulls intros.
Oh, sounds like a fucking genius.
Peter's. Peter's brilliant original idea, huh?
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah, was it the first time it happened in a 18th century library in Massachusetts? I think so. Also the first. Never mind. I'm going to stop.
Okay. Thank you. Please pull up there.
I do want to say a big chill moment, and this is so problematic, but one, I Believe I Can Fly plays every time. It is a fucking great song, and it is... like so sad that it's just you get chills and then you get shivers because you're like like remembering what that man did.
There's pee running down your face.
Oh, man.
I don't think about that when I'm listening to I Believe I Can Fly. I'm just thinking about Michael Jordan flying. All right,
that's
I'm not
true.
Concerned with who made it.
That's true. My, you know, the funny thing, I actually have this on DVD. Funny enough, and that's what we watched it on because you have to, the only way to stream it is to rent it on Prime. And so we put in the DVD, and as I Believe I Can Fly was playing, my wife goes, you know, at least this is on DVD, so he's not getting any royalties from this.
Oh,
I don't know. Can you still get royalties in prison?
I'm sure they're being garnished in some way.
Oh, R. Kelly's wages.
Yeah.
Are for sure getting garnished.
Oh, Christ. Okay. How to improve it? How would you guys improve this one? If
get Sean Bradley out of the fucking film. Get a real fucking shooting guard involved in this.
So, okay. So who's the move? It's 1996. You need a two guard. Who's the move?
Reggie's first. Reggie's at the top of my list. Then we could go to, we could talk about Penny being an option here. He's pretty hot with the kids at this time. I know he's a point guard, but he still fits for what we need in terms of the Monstars.
I know he's not a shooting guard, but what about Tim Hardaway too?
Hmm.
Sure.
Another
Any
nice mustache.
Guard? Just a guard, because there's so many. I would rather get Allen Houston. Anyone.
I'm gonna bend time a little bit here. But the movie came out in 96. Obviously, it must have filmed 95, probably late 94 into 95. When did it, do we, I don't remember from The Last Dance exactly. But if we're fudging time here, there is one of the most exciting young rookies that enters the league in 1996, and his name is Allen Iverson. Why not throw a bone to, like, the most exciting young promising guy who eventually went on to win the Rookie of the Year?
Because you cannot count on him to get to set to record his lines.
Him and Michael Jordan, for sure, would be a dangerous mixture anytime they shot together. I mean, that's the season that he crossed Jordan over. And, you know, theoretically, the torch was passed.
That's obviously. Why, the torch that's got why extinguished. It didn't happen.
That's true, yeah.
That's why he wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, that's a fair point, yeah.
John Mike Starks. Likes the Sixers, what about John Starks? Why are there two Hornets on this in this movie?
That is because Mike knew that he was going to be buying the Charlotte franchise.
Yeah, do you not remember the beginning when he says, I'm going to play baseball, and then I'm going to buy the Charlotte Hornets.
And then I'm going to make them fly. Suck for years.
Yeah. And then his dad was like, you sure you're going to do all that stuff?
Yeah. Like, oh, I better stay alive to see all that.
All right. Damn it, Benner. We were having fun. Even through the R. Kelly stuff, we were having fun.
The thing with the Monstars is it had to be guys that Mike enjoyed like beating and felt like he just owned, but it couldn't be someone he legitimately hated. Like, it couldn't be an Isaiah. Because Michael Jordan is essentially, he is Steve Buscemi's character from Billy Madison. He's sitting like in Gary a cabin.
Payton, Gary Payton would have been a great one. Ooh. But he might have just been too charismatic.
Sean Kemp, maybe? He might have been a great Monstar.
Yeah, when did they play in the finals? Who was the 96?
Well, Jordan technically, I don't know. Jordan was Jordan in the 96 final?
Wasn't it 96, 97, 98?
It was the 96 finals.
Yeah, damn. 95,
96. They just beat him, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not making any assumptions on someone's character, but I can think of what Sean Kemp was doing during his summers. And I don't think showing up to set was on Sean Kemp's agenda in between the season.
Yeah, fair point.
Unless that set was a vagina.
Okay, wow.
I would improve it also by making the actual basketball animation more fun. There was just a lot of, like, not that fun to watch basketball in this, especially when the Monstars, all they were doing were dunking. And, look, I love a good dunk. That's on record. But, it just would have been more fun.
Where's it on record?
I mean, look, I have a podcast about basketball you can listen to. It's called the Airbuds. I think that's what one thing that will improve in the new sequel is probably better basketball animation in general.
So let's talk about that. Let's wrap this up with Before More Restore, prequel, sequel, or remake. We know we're getting a sequel this summer, Space Jam and New Legacy. LeBron, Don Cheadle. It's directed by Malcolm D. Lee, who directed Undercover Brother, which is a movie that I love.
My first thought, too.
I love Undercover Brother. You know, what's okay, so what's everyone's expectation? The thing I'll say is Malcolm D. Lee, like, I think Undercover Brother is great. I'm gonna ride that momentum 20 years later. LeBron was also the best part of Trainwreck for me. And I love Bill Hader, but I thought LeBron was excellent in Trainwreck. So if he has the difference is in Trainwreck, he was funny because he had like it was making fun of himself, like the LeBron James being cheap is a really funny bit. Is LeBron going to allow himself to be greatly humbled in this movie for comedic effect? Because that was one thing Michael Jordan was not doing. Like, he would strike out on the baseball diamond, but Michael Jordan was no one's bitch in this movie.
No, I think we're about to get all of that, bro. I think we're going to get some heartfelt moments. LeBron has alluded to the storyline being about, you know, trying to get his son into basketball, even though we know Bronny is basically trying to get laid off his dad's existence already. Like,
it's good for him.
We already know how it ends, but
if this movie features a scene of LeBron coming home from the bubble to confront Bronny about that that IG story with the joint, how much money would you pay?
I would pay $300 to see that.
That's $300.
There it is.
Yeah. And the Looney Tunes are like getting high with Bronny.
Yeah.
And Bron has to come in there and stop him from hanging out with Foghorn Leghorn.
He comes in and smells, and he's like, I think I smell weed. And then he opens the door, and he's just in there with Pepe Le Pew. Because skunk. I think the movie at one point was about LeBron James teaching Pepe Le Pew about consent, but we're not getting that movie anymore, sadly.
I want to just shout out.
That's what
whatever.
I paid $300 for, the footage of that.
I was about to say, I just want to shout out whatever clearly woman works at Warner Brothers who stopped that from happening.
Yeah.
Good job.
It just treats such a serious issue with such a lack of regard. Just anyways, I think LeBron, he's proven, like, he's done commercials with puppets. He's a claymation guy in Sprite commercials. He's been an idiot in Trainwreck, a cheap idiot in Trainwreck. Like, he's
been a Muppet. Remember those Kobe commercials?
Yeah, he's been goofy. Like Michael, like never.
That's not
everything.
His voice,
was always like either very serious or like I'm the good guy in the McDonald's commercials. LeBron has always been kind of more playful, and I think that'll probably translate a little more to a better performance.
It'll also probably be fun because LeBron's better than Michael, so we'll get some better basketball. That'll help.
I don't want to get into that debate right now. But yeah, I think the movie overall is going to be bad.
Comment in the mentions, guys.
No. I'm going to let Peter Moses, Mr. Basketball himself, just lead us into hell.
So the last question, does LeBron make an MJ joke or does MJ appear in the movie?
100% Michael Jordan appears in this movie.
500%. There's no way he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the same spaceship.
Yeah.
He shows up in the same spaceship to save Bron halftime of the game.
So part B to that question, does he demand as much money as LeBron for that appearance?
I think I'm gonna audible and go. Does Bill Murray show up in this movie?
Ooh,
I think he does. Bill Murray will show up in anything if he's around, and
you just got to call his 1-800 number, right?
Yeah.
I mean, my favorite thing about Bill Murray is that like he doesn't have a cell phone. I don't even think he has an agent. He just does stuff with people he likes, like, you know, like Wes Anderson reaches out to him by carrier pigeon or however he operates and was like, I have this part. And Bill Murray's like, okay, I'm there. I'll show up. Just tell me when. And he just shows up and is Bill Murray. So I think if there's something like that and Bill Murray greatly loves sports, I think he'll be all in on this. Like he just does stuff with a few different directors like Sofia Coppola. Like he did that on the Rocks movie this year. So yeah, I think he'll show up in this one. But guys, you showed up big time in this one. This was a real pleasure. It is always a treat talking to you guys. Start around the horn. Peter, where can the folks follow you and find Airbuds and all that? Promote the shit out of everything.
At Airbuds Pod, at Danger Moses, and then check out Blue Wire Originals. We've got Spinsters that just dropped with Haley O'Shaughnessy, and a bunch of other exciting shit coming out this year.
Jamel, anything to promote?
I'm here as an agent of Blue Wire Podcast Chaos, at Airbuds Pod on everything, JamelJohnson.com as well. Spelled like it sounds.
Mike?
Yeah, just check us out, Airbuds, just three pals being dumb about basketball. You know what? I'm going to double down on Peter's recommendation of Spinsters. Haley O'Shaughnessy and Jordan Liggins are both terrific. I love the show so far. And yeah, I'll plug one other friend, Dunktown. Go listen to Dunktown. It's a great show about just enjoying basketball.
Best theme song in the game.
Best theme song in any podcast.
If you want to listen to a show that's better than our show, Dunktown.
Everyone go listen to Dunktown. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Tucker Carlson. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen, you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate, leave a review. You folks know the drill. Also, for any baseball fans, check out my bi-weekly interview series From Phenom to the Farm. That is presented to you by Baseball America. That comes at you every other Tuesday. Next Tuesday, great episode with former Red Padre A. Yonder Alonso. It's a great one. Tune into that. Again, yeah, check out the entire Blue Wire Pods Network. Big Screen Sports comes at you every Monday. So until then, thanks for listening.
Go fuck a bunny, you Fox News freaks.
Jesus wants me to fuck the bunny.